adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue.
We would be honored if you would join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups on your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a medical droid to help and heal human beings.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Star Wars From the Back to Tank, the Star Wars Rebels edition of our broadcast. And I am in the cockpit of the Ghost Ship with David.
Go ahead. I got to find Chopper.
All right. I don't think you were prepared, were you?
Not quite.
It's a little bit
of a mess in here.
Yeah. I'll just fly casually. Right, Dave?
Yeah, just fly casual.
Yeah. This two-part episode was far more interesting, far more complicated.
This is what the premiere should have been, dude.
Yeah, this should have been the season four premiere. And in retrospect, when you look back at what Filoni and team were trying to do, honestly, I think, unfortunately, I don't think the Mandalorian storyline has any real bearing on our overall story. And that might have not been the case at the beginning. And that's the reason why they kind of started it. However, now they're wrapping things up, and they needed to give that story a finish. They needed to tie up those loose ends, and unfortunately, I think that's all that story really amounts to, is them closing out a loose end.
A loose end, yeah. It really does feel like it, too, because like they had to explain where Kanan, because when they show up on Yavin at the beginning of this episode, yeah, they had to explain where they were.
Right. Well, because that's how it ended. But also they've been working towards the Mandalorian internal politics because of the Black Saber and making Sabine a relevant fixture within our crew, within our Rebels crew. So I get what they had to do. And I'm hoping that it does have more bearing later in this season as the final episodes are slowly revealing itself. I don't think it will, but I'm hoping there is. Otherwise, it would be a shame that this was just an example of them saying, oh, shit, we need to end things. And how are we going to do this? Well, let's do a two-part episode where we just have a bunch of action and we end that storyline permanently.
And unfortunately, that falls on the new showrunner, which is Justin Ridge.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It could. Yes. Absolutely. You're right. However, it could also be the fact that, A, they weren't sure that season four would in fact be their last season until after they had written, produced, and shot season three. Or B, Kathleen Kennedy and the Lucasfilm Story Group decided, hey, you know what? Let's hold back with this Mandalorian shit because there might be something there for a movie.
That might be true, too.
Because we already know, unfortunately, the cartoon can't dictate what the movies do. Yes, Star Wars Rebels has been in a very, they've had a very prolific entry into Star Wars, and I think it'll be forever remembered amongst the Star Wars enthusiasts as some of the best Star Wars we have ever received. So in that regard, it's great, it's fun, it's awesome, and it's definitely paved its own roads and became its own show outside of the main Skywalker storyline. But at the same time, we have to remember that a cartoon that airs on Disney XD will never dictate what the Star Wars Lucasfilm Story Group and Kathleen Kennedy are going to do in the future for the movies. Because the box office tentpole Star Wars films will always be the guiding force for Star Wars-driven stories.
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, that's going to be their core. I mean, their spine of the whole plan is the films.
Yeah.
And I guess as Star Wars fans, we just have to understand that whatever happens in the films, anything else, it's basically kind of like a tree. Everything else just is like a simple branch.
Right.
So,
and I'm okay with that. As long as each branch can feel unique and it can stand on its own feet and we're getting individual stories that matter, then but you know what? I'm okay with that 100%.
Yeah.
Now, David, today we are going to be talking about, we never actually mentioned the title. We were way too giddy and excited. We will be talking about the two-part episode In the Name of the Rebellion, written by Gary Whetta for part one. Part two was written by Matt Michnovitz, and directed by Sergio Paz and Boss Nig. Are you sure it's Nig?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, all right, Bosk Nig. All right, so, as I said, here, hold on, let me backtrack, dude. That's totally fine. lost my spot. I'm liking these two-part episodes. It's fun, and apparently we will be getting a run of two-part episodes all the way until we take our winter break, ending on November 13th with the title episode Rebel Assault. So that's fun. Now, it makes me a little sad that it feels like they're just trying to get them all out fast so they can wrap it up. It doesn't mean we're going to get any less story. It just means we're going to see the ending a lot sooner. But there also can be some really cool reasons to that. We talked about this during the off season, during the summer break from Star Wars Rebels on our regular broadcast. And there could be other reasons for that, simply besides Lucasfilm simply wanting to like end the show. It could do with a lot of things. There may be an actual story arc that matters to The Last Jedi. There may be some connections there, something foreshadowing, alluding to, whatever, and they want to make sure they get the episodes out in time for Last Jedi. Or it can be the opposite. There could be some Last Jedi references in the second half of Star Wars Rebels, the final season. So either way, it kind of makes me anticipate. I know this is the third year in a row we have thought this. We've discussed this before the release of Force Awakens, and we discussed it before the release of Rogue One.
I think we've been wrong.
We have been wrong. However, Rogue One did have some Easter eggs that tied into Star Wars Rebels, which was nice for us Star Wars Rebels fans. However, there was nothing that was like, oh, I see. There was nothing of value when it comes to story. It wasn't relevant to the story of Rebels. It was just nice to see.
It was Easter
and
eggs.
No. Yeah, and it was nice for the fans of Rebels to get a glimpse into this alleged connected universe where everything matters. It's nice to see that, hey, Syndulla exists. She was at the battle. Not the Battle of Yavin as of yet, because we know that she was at the battle in Rogue One and helped in the Rebels and aiding to get the Death Star plans. So to see all of that, that's cool. But it would be nice to have some relevancy and direct connection to the movie. So we'll see. Definitely something to look forward to. And at this point, I'm not going to be disappointed, just because I think Rebels does, in fact, stand on its own. And it's worked so well that it doesn't need a direct connection. But I do think it would be nice for Star Wars fans to really see that. I mean, Saw Gerrera is one of the best things that's ever happened to the expanded universe, in my opinion. I mean, we saw his roots and his origin story start in Clone Wars, and it bled over into Star Wars Rebels last year, then into Rogue One, and then now continuing on, we see this prequel story of this tragic, passionate rebel who turns almost to the dark side, minus the Force. He turns into
a radical,
and it's an interesting arc when you really examine and take a look at it, and how an individual can be radicalized. And there's definitely a political message there, and that's something rare for Star Wars. Yes, they do politics, and they don't refrain from using politics to tell their story, but actually using politics and social politics and foreign social politics to truly delve and examine what happens when you radicalize individuals. I mean, that's pretty rare for Star Wars to get into that territory and to see that on Disney XD.
Yeah, that's the bigger thing.
It's the sky's the limit. If you can do that in Star Wars Rebels, it makes me envious for the movie. It makes me want that, I should say, in the movies. Why are we not putting that type of complicated questions and morality and ethical and ethics. Why are we not putting that in the movies too? I mean, we saw glimpses of it in Rogue One with Cassian.
Yes,
we saw those questions and we saw the gray side of things, or the gray area of the Rebel Alliance. But to have those types of questions and to truly examine politics. And yeah, Star Wars isn't really the show for that per se, but why can it not be? This is a new era, right?
Yes.
Keep it Star Wars, keep it lighthearted, keep it fun, but also bring some of that relevance to it as well. That's, again, if you look at what Lucas did with the prequel, and I will always say this, and I know you disagree, but the strength of the prequels solely relies on the realistic political nature and the manipulation of the man behind the shadows.
Yeah, I have to really partially – while, yes, you are right. I'm not a big fan of the political intrigue that was in the prequels at first. They've been doing it really much more intelligently with, like, a lot of their latest installments. Rogue One was very good. I agree with you. Like, some of the stuff that was in Rogue One really was kind of like an eye-opener into – the Star Wars universe during a time when the Empire was in control. Like, everyone knows that the Empire was tyrannical and basically everyone was oppressed. But you never really got a sense of that before Rogue One ever came out. And you never got a sense of, well, what does it feel like to be tyrannical under the Empire's thumb? And Dave Filoni started actually showing that, starting with Clone Wars, and then he started carrying that. I started noticing he started carrying that with his own writing and stories throughout his entire run in Star Wars, from Clone Wars down to Rebels, down to what he's done, a lot of the stuff that he's helped out with the Lucas story groups. He's really tried to make Star Wars more than just that campy, happy-go-lucky fantasy sci-fi.
Yeah, well, it's also because audiences' taste has changed drastically in the course of two or three decades, and a lot of us do gravitate to things that are relatable and realistic. It's not that we need... Yes, I think audiences need escapism, and they don't want to have their minds working sometimes during movies, and they want to be able to shut down their brain. And that will always be a portion of entertainment and always be a portion of Star Wars. However, why not make it also slightly intellectual from the political side of things for those that want it?
Yeah, it goes, I mean, like,
as long as it's not heavy handed, and as long as they're not taking sides. I don't particularly exactly like when mainstream franchises take political sides.
Yeah.
They can have an opinion and a perspective, but drawing a clear line in the sand is always the wrong thing to do when you're dealing with a franchise, because you're gonna cut your audience in half, and that's just not smart business, period.
Yeah, and me and you have discussed this before on other shows about the difficulty as a writer to actually write something that is political and social, has political and social implications, but do it without turning off your audience.
Right.
And it's very, very rare, and it's very difficult as a writer. And with Star Wars Rebels, they've done it really. It's very interesting because, like, when you see Rogue One, I see it as baby steps. They tried to do it with baby steps first, going, okay, we're going to kind of push the political agenda just a little bit. And then if you watched the growth of Star Wars Rebels from the first season up to here, you start seeing those baby steps being taken bigger and bigger and bigger until now we're at season four. And yeah, you're right. We get introduced to darker characters that help kind of propel that storyline that I believe that Dave Filoni has been trying to get at ever since Clone Wars, is kind of show the darker side, the gray side of war.
Yeah.
And I think it's really done very well. I mean,
they've done it very well. It hasn't been heavy handed. It's been neutral. It's just been very, it's been from pers- It's been from a perspective. I wouldn't even say it's subjective. It's objective.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're able to do this type of thing on Disney XD, that's always a takeaway. And I'm not trying to insult Disney XD like, oh, it's Disney XD, but it's Disney XD. It's a cartoon network. And yet they're delving into real issues and just fantastic stories that are also adventurous. So they are killing two birds with one stone. And I don't mind seeing a more intellectual side of Star Wars. I think it's justified. The times that we're living in, it would make sense. We have a different type of appetite than we had 15, 20 years ago. So really fast, and then we need to go to our first break so we can get into the ins and outs of the episode. But there's an article taken from Screen Rant that I'm going to go into, and they actually draw some correlations to elements that we've seen this past week and, of course, since the start of season 4 in Rebels and things that we saw in Gareth Edwards' Rogue One. Okay, and I to save myself time, David, I Googled an article rather than started writing them all down, because that's the reason why I even searched for it. Because I'm like, man, there's a lot of connections going on with Rogue One.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think it's absolutely fun for a Star Wars fan to see these types of connections. Now, the latest episode of Disney XD Star Wars Rebels was less about Ghost and her crew and more about the buildup to director Gareth Edwards' 2016 film, Rogue One. And I want to disagree with that a bit. I don't think the focus is 100% on the buildup. I think that's a wrong choice of word. If you were to go with that line of thought, then you're taking away from the relevance that Rebels has for the relevance of Star Wars Rebels within the bigger picture of Star Wars and the story it's telling.
Yeah, I don't want to away from these characters' stories.
Yeah, I don't want to say we're building up to Rogue One like this is nothing but an ancillary, secondary aspect of Rogue One, and that's the farthest thing from accurate. Is there connections? Is there a build up in the sense that we know that Rogue One was a central event that changed the tide of war between the Rebel Alliance and the Empire? Absolutely. And to see that road being worked, I would say the more important element is not the event that we saw in Rogue One, but the path that was taken. So I don't want to take away from the path that we're seeing in Rebels.
Yeah.
For the actual event itself. Now, the cartoon has been slowly but surely leading up to the events of course, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, and, of course, Rogue One. Now, while that's still the plan, the series has taken a slightly different turn as of late. Rather than lead directly into New Hope, it seems that the animated series may be leading directly into Rogue One instead. And honestly, I think that might be a better plan, Dave. It would make more sense. In various reasons, it also helps with potential issues of going directly and bleeding directly into that movie. Honestly, I think there's room for a little bit of aftermath in both. As we know, Rogue One happens, 0 years before the Battle of Yavin?
Yes.
So there's only a few minutes between the events of Rogue One and the events of Episode 4. So to see all these things connected, and if our aftermath of Rebels actually bleeds over into that, I think that would make sense and work and allow us to have that true denouement, that ending where we can finally kind of rest easy and breathe normal after we see all these things unravel and we finally get the clear picture of where all of our heroes end up and their fates.
Especially since when you look this up, when the current timeline was updated, season 4 takes place. And I thought I was surprised when I found this out when we researched this, it takes place 1 year before Rogue One and the Battle of Yavin, which,
yeah, it's damn close.
That's so close. You have to see those elements start bleeding in because you're so close to a milestone event it is a milestone event.
Yeah.
And to ignore it would just, I think it would, just like what you said, they shouldn't just like slam into it, but you should see like bleeding elements of it coming into it because it is a milestone event in Star Wars. The Battle of Yavin is like absolutely where everything starts. Everyone points to, you know, like nowadays the Phantom Menace and stuff, but in all honesty, Star Wars heart and soul starts with the Battle of Yavin. That's why the timeline starts with zero BBY.
Yeah. The very official canon timeline. That's our before Common Era. That's how we tell time for Star Wars. Everything is before Battle of Yavin, either negative or for the positive. Yes. In either direction.
In either direction. Because it's the heart. It's the catalyst. It's the catalyst. So
it's the Big Bang when all life started.
But yeah. I forgot my train of thought right now. It was long.
The connections to Rogue One.
The connections to Rogue One and everything is kind of like, I expected those, but just like you, I'm like, I feel if they slam into it, it's going to take away from the more interesting story, which is the in-depth character development of all these characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The importance of, I believe, this bigger picture is, again, David, Rogue One wasn't that important. I mean, yes. I hate to break it to Star Wars fans. And I know I've said this before, and people probably want to throw their headphones off because Rogue One has become the go-to trendy thing to say now, the Star Wars fans being the best Star Wars film ever. And it was fun. It was fun.
And it was really
but
cool.
It was a moment. It was a moment in Star Wars history, and it was a moment we already knew.
Yes.
We already knew it. We already knew all about it. The only thing it really did for us was it introduced the idea that the Death Star was actually powered by Kybers, which we already had in other Expanded Universe books. They already alluded to that. So I'm not saying the movie wasn't good. It's an A movie, but it didn't do anything to push the story forward. So I would even put relevancy when it comes to Star Wars stories and what's really pushing the mythos of Star Wars forward. That rests on the shoulders of Star Wars Rebels at this point. Yeah. It's done so much for Star Wars mythos. I mean, I would even dare say it has done more than even Force Awakens at this point.
Oh, absolutely. I think so, too, especially since the last season. The storylines that Dave Filoni has written absolutely tied to what the core Star Wars storyline is, which is the Skywalker story.
Right.
I mean, last season, one of the season finale or the episode before the season finale, Twin Suns, that stepped right on what you could consider like holy ground territory for Star Wars storytelling. They went to the planet of Tatooine. You got to see Obi-Wan. You got to see Luke. That I never thought before that I would be able to say, hey, they were going to show Luke Skywalker as a small child.
Yeah.
Before New Hope.
Right.
I thought they'd never do it because it's a slippery slope.
Yeah. And it wasn't just fan service. It wasn't just, hey guys, Luke Skywalker. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was there to show the new direction for the Lucasfilm story group and the overall bigger picture of Star Wars. And that Obi-Wan believes that Luke was the chosen one.
Yeah.
And that's the beautiful thing about Rebels is that it's not just about fan service. It's about moving the Star Wars story forward and revealing and foreshadowing the new era of Star Wars and what we can expect from other iterations of Star Wars. And that's why bringing it back to this article, I just strongly disagree that this show is not important and it's about that this season's going to be about revving up to Rogue One. That's just a poor way of saying what this series is about, what this season's about, because again, this season, in my opinion, the events that's about to happen in Rebels season 4 is far more important to the Star Wars story than anything we saw in Rogue One. And it's always the path. What's remembered? The actual event or the people who got to the event or the trailblazers who got you there? The yes. Trailblazers are always remembered in history. And this is what we're going to see in season 4. It's not about revving up to that point. It's about the path that the rebels took to get to that point. And again, assuming that we're even going to see Rogue One or an aspect of Rogue One at the end of season four of Rebels. And even if we don't, I don't think that matters. I don't think we need to. But we do need to start moving pieces. Things
that.
Right. Things that are happening in this world are going to affect the Rebels crew. And we need to start putting those appropriate pieces in place so that everything feels right and cohesive, no matter what direction we end up taking the Phoenix Squadron aspect, the Rebels crew, Ezra, and what direction we end up taking them. Now, David, moving into the next article, and then we need to go to a break. We're really dragging here. Star Wars Rebels producer teases hidden season four villain. I have no idea who this can be. Star Wars Rebels producer Dave Filoni teases a hidden villain, according to ScreenRant.com, that in the final season of the animated series, season four, which continues to follow young Force user Ezra Bridger and the ghost crew of Rebels set between Revenge of the Sith. Yes, thank you. Thank you. We don't need that. Even though Thrawn played a huge role as the central villain last season and will yet again face off against the Rebels in the final season, there have been other villains throughout the seasons, including multiple Inquisitors, Imperial Commanders, past Clone Wars villains like Darth Maul, and even the Dark Lord himself, Darth Vader, that have gone up against the Rebels and their fight to stop the Imperials from taking over the galaxy. In a recent interview via Daily News, executive producer David, I think I need to slow down.
Executive producer,
Star Wars Rebels, Dave Filoni, has confirmed that Thrawn is going to serve as the main villain for season four. But he also added there may be another villain hiding somewhere in the galaxy far, far away that the Rebels are going to face with. Here is what he said about Thrawn and what he teased about the mysterious villains. He's still the one that is watching for them and that they're running from and their main competitor. He's speaking about Thrawn, of course, which is different. We've never done that over two seasons before. There may be some other villains, more arch than him, hiding somewhere. We'll have to wait and see. One obvious villain that may make an appearance during the season, final season, is Darth Vader. Yeah, you know what? I don't know. I just don't think that's the type of villains we're going to get. I think Darth Vader, we may see him towards the end to create some connections, but I don't think that's going to be the villain. I honestly think it's going to be less obvious based on what we saw this week. I'm willing to bet that the hidden villain is possibly going to end up being Guerrera. Because, yeah. Yes, Guerrera is an evil, but he has an opposing ideology. And we already know that by the Battle of Yavin and the events in Rogue One, he is an enemy of the Rebel Alliance. He is considered a radical. They don't want to have anything to do with him. He even kills members of their Rebel Alliance that come to find him.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they had to go find Jyn Erso. So I think that this hidden villain is going to be Guerrera. We're going to really see his story flesh out even more and see his downward spiral into insanity, which is what he ended up becoming, his tragic end in Rogue One. He was teetering on the border of insanity and paranoia.
You get that sense, especially in this episode, because like, I give props to Forrest Whitaker for actually voicing this, because,
dude, an Oscar winning actor coming in to continue his story arc from Rogue One is just so awesome. Only Lucasfilm could pull that off, dude.
And he's done such a really great job with this character since he played it in Rogue One, and then now he's portraying it in Rebels. He's done a fantastic job actually portraying Guerrera as kind of like this, almost like a fallen figure, and Star Wars is always great with showing fallen figures. I mean, you have Obi-Wan, you have Anakin, you can put Saw Gerrera up there because his story is absolutely tragic.
He fits the motif.
He fits the motif perfectly.
Yeah. Or the archetype, I should say. But yeah, absolutely does. I love it. I'm drawn to his story in a lot of ways. On that note, Dave, we do need to take a very quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to jump into all the ins and outs of this week's doubleheader. We'll be right back.
Just a friendly reminder, please leave us a review on Stitcher. Go to Stitcher.com and search From the Bat to Tank. Every review left helps us get seen by more people. And we thank you so much. Remember, go to Stitcher.com and search From the Bat to Tank. Thank you.
This is so exciting to see in your side.
Hey, you're not supposed to be in the studio.
Whoops!
See that red light? Yeah, that means I'm live and on the air.
This is very, very bad.
Get out.
No, allow him. Good day.
Hello, everyone out there. This is Dewback Billy. We've all lost loved ones, but don't let that stop you. Death is not the end. Here at I Have the Power to Save the Ones You Love, we can all get back a dead loved one. Just listen to one of our happy customers.
Well, since high school, I had a crush on Tabby Antilles. But she married Jed Sloan, the varsity pod racing champion. Last year, she died in a shuttle accident. Sloan had given up and buried her remains at the Twin Moisture Evaporator Cemetery here on Tatooine. He never really loved her, not as much as I did and do.
Now, not much of Tabby was left after the shuttle incident, but that's okay. All we need is a leg, an arm, etc. to bring back the one you love.
So one night, I snuck into the cemetery and I unearthed her decomposing body. And took them right over to I Have the Power to Save the One You Love.
Thanks to the exclusive deal we set up with Emperor Palpatine, we were able to bring back Tabby, and we can do the same for you. Call now for your free consultation. HoloNet number 777 Save the One You Love.
I was so happy. I knew that because I brought Tabby back to life, she'd love me and not Sloan. And boy, was I right.
Oh, yes! I have the power to save the one you love!
This message is approved by the Galactic Empire.
We did it!
Hello, Rain Man Digital listeners. The new Rain Man Digital app is now available in the Google Play Store. You can now take the entire Rain Man Digital Network on the go, anywhere you want to go, on your Android-based device. Whether you want to listen to Supernatural, The Crossroads, The Rain Man Show, Critique Revolve, Weird West Radio, or Star Wars From the Back to Tank, it doesn't matter. You can take all those shows now on any Android device. So go to the Google Play Store and search Rain Man Digital and download the free app today. The app will also be available very soon for iPhones. So keep checking in.
The Force is with you, young Skywalker. But you are not a Jedi.
On Rain Man Digital.
Two trailer park girls go round the outside, round the outside, round the outside.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Star Wars From the Back to Tank, the Rebels edition. Today we're going to be discussing and breaking down the two-part episode, In the Name of the Rebellion, written by Gary Whetta and Matt Michnovitz, and directed by Sergio Paz. All right. Again, two-part episode. And Dave, the opening 7 minutes had more story than the entire two-part episode that we saw last week.
Absolutely.
And I was completely giddy at the edge of my seat, ecstatic about everything we got. Because number one, let's focus on how the episode actually started, which is it was a very nostalgic Star Wars nerd fanboy moment. It was so cool to see that the Phoenix Squadron has officially joined the Rebel force that we all have known for countless years now. The actual conglomerate of the Rebel Alliance that we saw starting with Episode 4 and, of course, bleeding throughout. And to see how we have taken those steps throughout the last four seasons of Star Wars Rebels, and we got finally to that point of the true Rebel Alliance. It was such a fanboy moment to see that connection, and also to see the Anazazi or the Masani. What are those temples? Yavin 4?
I can't remember what they call them, but basically they based them off the Aztec temples.
Yeah, it was awesome to see the Yavin 4 temples, where unfortunately it's no longer Star Wars canon, but we find out there's so much history behind those temples. I, as a Star Wars fan, am still going to believe it's true, but Exar Kun, his Force spirit lingers in there, one of the greatest Sith Lords of all time. I mean, there's so much history, Star Wars history, that's been retconned, but there's so much Star Wars history built on Yavin 4. So to see those temples play a role again and become a part of Star Wars, and to see the brickwork leading to what they end up being, and they're the focal point of the first official Rebel hideout, it was just so cool.
It was so cool. And dude, that opening got me giddy from the start. I mean, once you see the red moon of Yavin, automatically you get those nostalgic feelings of the Death Star coming around that planet, or Luke and Rogue Squadron coming across that planet going towards the Death Star. And that I love the fact that I don't know if they meant to do it, but it was definitely a visual callback once you open your episode like that to show the audience, this is it. We're really close to New Hope, because that's Yavin. That's where it all starts.
Yeah. So it was awesome. And it's called the Masazi Temple.
The Masazi Temple.
I knew I was kind of close.
And I know, like, later, those temples later in the Legends universe now.
Yeah.
They later on become like the temples that Luke uses to start up the Jedi Order again.
Yeah, the Jedi Academy. In fact, the trilogy, the Jedi Academy trilogy, all takes place on Yavin 4, and that's how we find out about Exar Kun's soul. And of course, we saw that already, or his spirit, I should say. We saw the beginnings of that in the Old Republic or the Sith storylines. Where we actually saw him going through the steps, how he became evil and how he ended up dying. It was great. So it's just, there's so much history there. Unfortunately, it was retconned, and hopefully someday they build on that again.
They build on it again. Yeah, I would love the funniest part by far. I kept thinking to myself, this episode had me. It had me geeking out as a fanboy at every moment, because I kept telling myself, man, if they didn't retcon everything, what would have happened if, like, Kanan was meditating and Ezra was meditating and they felt the presence of Exar Kun?
Yeah,
that would be just absolutely make every Star Wars fan's dream come true.
What if it still happens?
True, we're not done yet.
And then they slowly bring Exar Kun out of mothballs and he's no longer retconned. And it may not have all the history behind it, but to know that they're still going to kind of keep that around, and they've pulled it out of the Legends box, man, I would be so psyched on that. I know we're really going off the path here, but what if that's the hidden villain?
Oh!
That'd be so good, man. All right, let's get back on track here. Yes. Now, as I said, the episode opened up with the Phoenix Squadron officially joining, as we have been kind of waiting for it to happen, the very one and only Rebel Alliance, led by Mon Mothma, Bail Organa. I mean, it was fun to see all that happen. But I think the biggest takeaway is the conflict within the Rebel Alliance. And it's something that we never were privy to in New Hope. it was more of a straightforward story, good versus evil, which was kind of the focus for the trilogy for Lucas's era. It was good and bad, light and dark. There wasn't room for the complicated nature of politics because that's not what the focus was. Whereas now, moving into the new era of Star Wars, where the focus is a bit more on the Rebel Alliance and not on the Skywalker storyline, we're able to delve into some of those political nuances and to see that the Rebel Alliance also struggled with ethical questions. Number one, it's just realistic. There isn't an army or military force in the world that doesn't struggle with questions like that each and every day when they choose to invade, when they choose to protect, when they choose to defend. These questions are asked. How many casualties, how many civilian casualties, and what, how much of our soul are we willing to sell away? So this is a very realistic perspective to look at the Rebel Alliance and to use Saw Gerrera, something from Rogue One, and kind of build up that backstory. And it's so cool to say, to know, first off, this isn't something they just pulled out of their ass. This is a direction that Saw Gerrera has been going down since Clone Wars.
Yeah. And also, it's the on the flip side, the parallel to him is Mon Mothma. That scene with Saw Gerrera and Mon Mothma, you can't really choose a side. There's no wrong side. Because
it's all subjective.
It's all subjective because while you might agree with Saw Gerrera and basically say, yeah, everyone knows the Empire's in control right now. Everyone's under their tyrannical dictatorship. However, Mon Mothma's right is kind of Mon Mothma has a point by basically saying there has to be a way to do this peacefully and negotiating without sacrificing civilians.
Yeah.
And it's like, how far are you willing to go to defeat your enemy if that means that you become just like your enemy?
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. The parallels they're drawing between Mon Mothma and Gerrera don't just stop there. There's also connections to the overall theme of Star Wars, which we just mentioned, which was originally Lucas's focus, which was good and bad, light and dark. And you're seeing that right there, the very example of that. You see an individual who's going down a questionable path, and you see someone who's taken a path, you know, the high road. It's a road that's tougher. It's not as easy. There's a lot more work to it. But it is ultimately, I think, in a world decide where you decide what's right and what's wrong, I think that's going to be the obvious decision. That's going to be the right decision to make morally. Is it the right decision to make in war? What do you need to do to save lives? It goes to that question dating back to World War II and dropping the bomb on the Japanese. Was that the right thing to do? Many people and historians and to this day say more people would have died eventually and that we actually saved lives by doing something so drastic. So these are real things. These are real examples and questions that are legitimate. So is there a wrong side to this, to the dark aspect, the I don't want to say the easier road, maybe the easier road at the moment, but what it does to your soul and what it does to the psychology or the psychological makeup of that individual in the aftermath, is it worth it? So all these things are just, it's so again, for being on Disney XD, it's so adult.
It's so adult.
It's so real.
And on a particularly interesting side note about that, we've been talking about a lot of the side characters that they've done very well, actually giving more backstory and giving more depth. For the past two seasons, the character of Mon Mothma has gone from this character that we've only seen her in the movies twice. Once was at Return of the Jedi. The other was Battle of New Hope. And at both times, she's just seen as this stoic,
leader. We saw her in Rogue One.
Out of all the movies.
Did we actually see her in Revenge of the Sith? I thought her scenes were cut.
I believe her scenes were cut, but I'm not sure. I know that there were scenes of her, but I think they were cut. But just imagine that they took a character that we barely knew from the original movies. And they've turned her into kind of like this really very important. They've really showed the importance of Mon Mothma and how And more important, Mon Mothma is at this point than someone who is a complete fan favorite in Princess Leia. Everyone always looks at Princess Leia and says, oh, she's the leader of the Rebel Alliance. No, she isn't. The real leader of the Rebel Alliance is Mon Mothma. And the thing that I found really interesting was they gave her such a character development with this past two seasons in Rebels. You do kind of sympathize with her as a human being that has to make these really harsh decisions. Do I go the high road and do like Saw Gerrera and just be embrace being a radical? Yeah. Because she's called, Saw Gerrera even tells her, me and you are being called criminals. At least I act like one.
Yeah, that was such a good line.
And it's like, that's a very valid point. And you could tell that Mon Mothma just is tortured by that because she's right. She's taking the more difficult road because she knows that this is the best road to take for her soul.
Yeah. Yep. Now, connecting it back to what really matters, this show is about our Rebels crew and how it affects them, particularly Ezra Bridger. Now, what does this all mean for Ezra? We, first off, before Gerrera made his grand appearance, we saw Ezra already questioning the actions of Mon Mothma. We even saw Sundula, Hera, question Mon Mothma. The crew is all being affected by Guerrero's antics and what he's doing. They're all questioning their leadership and wondering if they're just not doing enough, wondering if they're doing the wrong thing. Are we making the wrong decisions? And I think more than anything, it's affecting Ezra because he's a Jedi. He's emotional. He has a lot of conflicting emotions. He's trying to keep those in check. He's trying to keep those in line with everything Kanan taught him. But at the same time, you have this young man, young individual who was a victim most of his life, and now he's had control. Now he has control of his life, and he's become somewhat of a leader, and he has power to make change. Are we going to see Guerrero's actions really take root within Ezra, which will then cause him to make decisions that maybe the rest of the Rebel Alliance or even the Phoenix Squadron or a Rebel's crew may not agree with what he's doing because he wants to help his planet. And yes, Mon Mothma showed him a very neutral, I guess, explained to him in a very diplomatic way, saying, hey, look at all these other planets. What makes your planet? That's pretty much what she said. What makes your planet any more special than these?
Because she even said that her own planet's under Imperial leadership and she wants to help them.
Right. So what is that going to mean to Ezra? Because if I was Ezra, and maybe it's just a look into who I am as a person, I wouldn't give two shits. I'm like, listen, that sucks that these other planets are being occupied. But my planet with my loved ones and my friends, I care about more because these are my direct connections. These are my people.
And I think that's what's been interesting. Up to this point, this episode, I always was trying to figure out Ezra's story, and this episode kind of made me believe that I have a theory that basically every season, Ezra's character, his development is based on basically two opposing viewpoints that he has to learn about. In the first season, it was about his viewpoint as a young man versus meeting this, you know, larger than life Jedi Knight that he wants to follow. So it's his fanboyism as a young man versus being an adult. You have to work beside this Jedi Knight. Then second season comes around, you have Ahsoka come in, and you have Ahsoka and Kanan trying to teach Ezra two different viewpoints. And in the end, that affects his life. In third season, it comes down to Ezra, Darth Maul, and Kanan. What teachings does he follow? Does he follow Darth Maul? Because Darth Maul is telling him, hey, you're great at this. This is the easier way out. Take the easy way out. This is what you're good at. Kanan basically telling him, no, this is not the improper way of doing things. And in the end, he learns from his teachings from both that basically he has to take a certain path. Now in fourth season, we're seeing him torn between two other figures. And that's why I'm like going, we're seeing this young man get matured by making these tough decisions.
That sounds homoerotic.
We're seeing this young man get matured.
Get matured.
Now, I agree with you. It goes back to what we talked about last week. Star Wars Rebels is about Ezra's perspective, on the events that are unfolding around him. And your comparisons that you just walked us through is absolutely right. It's all a perspective from Ezra in the decisions that he has to make. It's always Ezra. He's the one that leads this series by the nose for the most part. But there's one missing element there, Dave, and that's Lothal. Lothal has always been a part of the Star Wars Rebels story. And before we end this season, there's got to be an importance-driven home on that aspect. Like, we can't forget about Lothal. Lothal has always been there in Rebels, and much like the article we covered last week about things that Dave Filoni and Rebels has forgotten or things that they have dropped the ball on, they said before the season ends they need to describe or explain the relevance and the importance of Lothal, because it's always been a figurehead within our story. Mm-hmm. And Dave Filoni knows how to tell a story. Justin Ridge knows how to tell a story. These guys know what they're doing. And I have a strong feeling that Lothal will be an important part to the final chapter of Star Wars Rebels and the decisions that Ezra ends up making. And by putting Lothal in the center or front and center this week and using it as a way to create conflicted feelings and potential loyalty for Ezra, that's Filoni and Justin Ridge putting the importance back on Lothal. Lothal may just be that element that makes Ezra either go, I don't want to say light and dark, I think that's too obvious, but I think that's going to be the deciding factor. There was a reason why Guerrero said at the end of the second part that I'm willing to do whatever I have to save my world. Are you? That was said for a reason. That wasn't just a throwaway line to show Guerrero's ultimate resolve and that he's going to get the job done. That you got to remember, this is from the perspective of Ezra Bridger. It's about him.
Mm-hmm.
So that line of dialogue was there to foreshadow potential decisions that Ezra will have to make, thereby putting the planet of Lothal that's been there since the beginning back to the forefront and important to the story.
You bring up a very valid point, because like, now that I think about it, remember back in the season premiere with the Mandalorian episodes, it was kind of odd that we had that scene that Ezra brings up with Sabine, that basically, well, your planet's not as different from mine, but Sabine tells Ezra about the damage her planet took. And they kind of made an emphasis of that scene for Ezra, where he's explained that this beautiful planet was utterly destroyed by the Empire, and this is what it turned out to be, or this is what happens when war broke out. So I'm like you. You bring up that valid question, what is going to happen to Lothal? I think
it has to be about Lothal. It has to be. Whatever decisions Ezra has to make before the end of the show, it has to go back to Lothal. Otherwise, why has it been the focal point since the very beginning? It just wouldn't make sense to the main spine of Ezra and Rebels and what we've seen so far.
Yeah. And it's interesting that basically you bring up your point of view is like, if you were Ezra, you would tell Mon Mothma, I don't freaking care. I need to save my planet.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite. I would actually give up my home planet if it meant actually saving billions more.
I wouldn't. I'm selfish.
It's not about being selfish. It's about like seeing a point of view.
Nah, I'd be selfish.
Selfish?
I would join Guerrera, man. I would be a good balance because I don't think I would just kill innocent people either, but I would definitely be more radical in my approach if I'm fighting a war where you can't fight evil with goodness. I refuse to ever subscribe to that line of thinking.
To the line of thinking of like Mon Mothma where negotiations have to work.
Yeah, you're dealing with an evil, evil empire. Okay, Palpatine has murdered millions of people. Darth Vader has murdered millions of people. And you just can't deal with those types of situations in kid gloves, with kid gloves. And that's why, again, I like the realness that's being brought to Star Wars in regards to politics and the questions it poses. I feel like it's one of the greatest moments in Star Wars Rebels outside of my go-to love affair that I have with the Star Wars, you know, mysticism, our Jedi mysticism or Force mysticism, whatever you want to call it. I think this might be one of my favorite moments in Star Wars Rebels. Outside of those things is the call to arms that Guerrera like just projected himself and started basically, essentially getting on a soapbox and pumping out propaganda. I mean, it was just so good, and it fits to what we're seeing nowadays with Star Wars and even what we saw with Rogue One in the gray area of things. And I know there's fans out there who aren't happy with the gray area. My brother is one of them, my younger brother. He loves Star Wars and he likes everything we're getting, but he says he's over the gray area. He says Star Wars is about good and bad, not kind of good and kind of bad. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I think the original Skywalker storyline was very much that. But this is no longer the original Skywalker storyline. And also, we're not naive like that anymore. There is no life is not black and white.
Yeah,
it is not black and white. And I don't feel like stories and naive outlooks when it comes to politics and war and death and darkness, I don't think it's realistic or even digestible for mainstream audiences nowadays to say, yeah, good and bad, that's all that matters, because that's not realistic. It works for the Skywalker storyline once again because that's what it was built on. But moving forward into these new Star Wars stories, people aren't all good. People aren't all bad. We all make dumb decisions sometimes. We're imperfect people. So I like this direction.
I love this direction.
Yeah.
Because like of the ethical questions, it brings up real ethical questions. Just remember, if you choose Saw Gerrera's side, you might get mind raped by that tentacle thing.
Nah, I'm all right with that. I'm all right with that. I like being mind raped from time to time.
Mind raped.
All right. So moving into some Easter egg moments. Number one, as a Star Wars nutcase, I was pretty happy to see the official introduction of Death Troopers, which we obviously know Thrawn has used them at one point. And also, of course, Orson Krennic. I think he definitely brought those Death Troopers to the mainstream in Rogue One as his personal bodyguard escorts. And to see them now protecting his interest, the Kyber Crystal, was just such a great Star Wars fanboy moment.
Oh, yeah.
It was nice to see those little connections. I like Easter eggs and I like connections like that as long as these connections aren't dictating our story and distracting from the Star Wars Rebels story. I'm good with that. I like the connections. It makes the world of Star Wars feel connected like it should, and it would make sense. I mean, Saul Guerrero's story is just completely genius, and the connection from Clone Wars and then leading into his investigation into Geonosis and why the planet was pretty much obliterated, and now his investigation has led him to this very moment, which eventually is going to lead him to Jyn Erso and the message from Galen. And he's actually going to see his resolve finally. He's going to see his endgame in Rogue One. And to see all these things kind of not being the focus of the story, but crossing paths with our main story is just so cool. I absolutely love it. And I do like the name drop of
Krennic.
Of Krennic. It was fun.
That was fun.
I was hoping we got that because it's something that I feel needs to be done because he's a relatively new character. He's a character that was used as the villain for Rogue One, and we find out through
various backstories, and of course Rogue One, that he was the mastermind behind getting the Death Star created. And Tarkin didn't really take control until he saw that it was actually happening. So I think he has to be recognized in these stories leading up to that. It would only make sense, and it would justify his importance in Rogue One.
Absolutely. And the one thing that I actually noticed in this episode was that scene with Ezra, where Guerrera is trying to explain to Ezra why he does what he does. And he tells Ezra that I've lost everything. I've lost absolutely everything because I have to follow this path to the end. And it's cost me everything. So I have to follow this to the end. And it's interesting because it made me think about like that scene with him and Jin in Rogue One, when he's confronted by Jin, and you realize that, yeah, Guerrera really does feel like he lost everything, because that dialogue between him and Jin, everyone kind of wondered, why was it that all of a sudden Guerrera kind of switched characters and suddenly he's more like, I'm trying to protect you. I did it to protect you, to get you away from this. And when you take that into context of his character, what we see in Rogue One, in Rebels, where he's telling Ezra, I've lost everything. I have to see this to the very end. It really does put that scene of him and Jin really into a really better perspective.
Yeah, I agree.
Because like, yeah, before Rogue One, he thought Jin was dead. He legitimately thought she was dead.
Yeah.
So to see her, that snapped him out of it.
Right.
And then that flipped him to basically saying, oh my God, I have to, I did this wrong. She was still alive.
Yeah. But that's Rogue One, though.
Yes.
We got to focus on it. So what are you trying to connect it to, what we saw in Rebels then?
Just the development of Guerrera's character. They made a side character in Rebels really so goddamn interesting.
I agree.
And then at the same time, they used him to kind of actually help develop Ezra, because as I said,
yeah, well, that's the point.
You got to do that.
Absolutely. So I have to say that before we wrap, that I do give this episode an A. It's a solid installment of Star Wars Rebels and should have been the premiere. Dave, your grade?
I give it an A too. I agree with you wholeheartedly. This should have been the premiere. And then they could have done the Mandalorian thing, but I do think that continuity-wise, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank everybody for listening to our discussion on Star Wars Rebels Season 4, Episodes... What is it? What episode is this, anyways? Episode 3 and 4, technically? And we will be back next week with a full-on discussion of Star Wars Rebels. So please, if you miss any part of our show, head over to Stitcher and iTunes. Just search Star Wars From the Back to Tank, the Rebels edition, and add it to your favorites, like it, and leave us reviews. Thank you, and thank you, Dave.
Thank you. May the Force be with us.
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1, and if you've missed any portion of the show, you can always head over to FromTheBackToTank.com and listen to the show at your leisure. We're also on Stitcher, Smart Radio, Stitcher.com, search Bacta, and add us to your favorites. Thank you. And listen responsibly. And may the Force be with you. And long live. Thank you for listening to From the Back to Tank. And From the Back to Tank is executive produced by Michael Flores and Dustin Lucas. Hosted by Michael Flores, David Sabal. You can find out more about our show by going to www.fromthebacktotank.com. You can also find us on Twitter at FromBackToTank, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/FromTheBackToTank. Thank you.